Welcome to another Salvation by Grace midweek message. Salvation by Grace is the teaching ministry of Grace Christian Assembly, a Sovereign Grace Fellowship in Smyrna, Tennessee. You'll find us on the internet at salvationbygrace.org. We are currently studying the book of the prophet Jeremiah. So grab your Bible and join the congregation of GCA, along with our teaching pastor, Jim McLarty.
Well, tonight we are in Jeremiah 47 and 48. Jeremiah 47 is a very short chapter. 48 is a very long chapter with a whole lot of Middle Eastern names that we will have to work our way through. What I hope you come away with from this section of Jeremiah, starting 2 weeks ago when we looked at Jeremiah 46, and then 47, 48, carrying on for the next couple of chapters, God is announcing his judgment against the various nations, the Gentile nations, that surround Israel. Now, for the last several weeks, I have been emphasizing the fact that different people groups, different nations, had their own gods, their own collection of gods, the things that they worshiped. To this very day, it's very rare to find any group of people, any nation of people that doesn't have its own religion. Christianity is not universal across the world. We certainly know that other religions exist, and those religions have their own gods that go by their own names. But what the God of Israel is proving at this point with these prophecies and judgments is that he is not solely the God of Israel, even though he calls himself that, as opposed to the God of any Gentile nations. He doesn't call himself the God of the Egyptians or the God of the Babylonians. He is the God of Israel, Yahweh by name, but he is also the maker of heaven and earth. He is also the all-creator God. Therefore, his sovereignty is universal. His sovereignty is not exclusive to his dealings with national Israel. These nations, like we saw 2 weeks ago with Egypt, these nations have their own gods. And as God is demonstrating his judgment against these nations, he is ipso facto proving that their gods do not exist and cannot help them. That if God, Yahweh, says that he is going to pour out judgment on a nation and then that judgment comes true, and their gods are powerless to keep them, protect them, or help them, that is a demonstration of the validity of the God of Israel and the complete powerlessness of any other so-called God on the planet. So as we're reading through these judgments tonight against Philistia and against Moab, and then he's going to go on to Ammon, and he's going to go on to Edom, and he's going to hand out his judgments. As you see that these judgments actually came true in time and history, you recognize that the God of Israel is the only God who can say of himself, I am because I am, and he's the only God who can say, you'll have no other gods before me, because I am the only God who provably exists. And in demonstrating that, he's equally demonstrating that all the other gods are not. And so that's kind of what I want you to see from these judgments. The details are sometimes rather poetic. It's prose. But in the end, as you understand it, it is all judgment language being handed out by Yahweh against these people groups. Chapter 47 of Jeremiah. That which came as the word of the Lord to Jeremiah the prophet concerning the Philistines before Pharaoh conquered Gaza. That gives us a timestamp. We have some idea when that is. We're talking about 609 BC here. Philistia is an area that's occupying the coastal plain of Judah. It is still an area over there where there's a certain amount of argument about who owns the land. It's the strip between the Mediterranean Sea and the land of Israel and Judah. If you're looking at a modern map, it's basically what you would see as Western Israel, Gaza, the Gaza Strip, Lebanon, Syria. That's what you're looking at over there. Now, this area of Philistia had been a thorn in Israel's side from the very beginning, from the earliest conquest of the land as they came out of Egypt. In fact, if you take a look at Judges 3 for just a moment, you'll see that God, in his divine sovereignty, left those nations there for a purpose. But their purpose was not for their own individual glorification, which in chapter 48, God's really going to call out the fact that Moab was sitting at rest for a very long time, that they were wealthy, and as a consequence, their own pride and arrogance had grown up around them, and God is going to judge them on their pride. But back in Judges 3, I'm going to read the first six verses. We read, "Now these are the nations which Yahweh left." Okay, so when they conquered the land, they were told to go in and just wipe out the people that were there. And yet, there were certain nations, groups of people, small groups that were still left in the area, and they were left there for a purpose. It says, to test Israel by them. So God left those nations there, like Philistia. They are left in the land for the purpose of testing Israel, because it's the God of Israel. It's all about Israel. And so their existence is for Israel's benefit to test them. That is, all of them who had not experienced any of the wars of Canaan, only in order that the generations of the sons of Israel might be taught war, so that they'll be taught how to fight, those who had not been experiencing it formerly. Well, that's just fascinating. You're talking about the God who is the God of armies, who gives himself the name, I am Yahweh Sabaoth. And because he is the God of armies, he also expects Israel to be his army. And he expects them to be able to defend their own land, to fight. And so he left areas like Philistia in the land to test Israel so that they would have someone to fight, so that they would be experienced in warfare. That's utter sovereignty, and that's not the way we think of God. And yet that is exactly how he is described in the book of Judges, because he is the God who can do whatever he wants with his creation. These nations are, according to verse 3, the five lords of the Philistines, and all the Canaanites and the Sidonians and the Hivites who live in Mount Lebanon, from Mount Baal Hermon as far as Lebo Hamath. They are for testing Israel to find out if they, Israel, would obey the commandments of Yahweh, which he had commanded their fathers through Moses. The sons of Israel lived among the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites. And then verse 6 tells you how Israel failed the test immediately, because one of the things that they were told when they were brought into the land is, now don't intermarry with those people. Don't give your sons or daughters to those people, because they would be pulled away to other gods. But verse 6 says, and they took their daughters for themselves as wives and gave their own daughters to their sons to serve their gods. So very early on, we read that God is testing them by leaving those foreign nations in that area so that they would learn how to fight, and so that God could test them to see if they would remain true to his commandments and his law that he gave them. And then right away in verse 6, and they failed the test just immediately. Okay, so that's the people we're talking about here. Back in Jeremiah 47, that which came as the word of Yahweh to Jeremiah the prophet concerning the Philistines before Pharaoh conquered Gaza. Thus says Yahweh, "Behold, waters are coming to rise from the north and become an overflowing torrent and overflow the land and its fullness, the city and those who live in it, and the men will cry out and every inhabitant of the land will wail." We've seen that language of floods coming, armies coming from the north. This is obviously talking again about the Chaldeans, the Babylonians, about Nebuchadnezzar's armies that are going to conquer that entire area of the Middle East. "Because of the noise of the galloping hoofs of his stallions, the tumult of his chariots, and the rumbling of his wheels, the fathers have not turned back for their children," which is really interesting language. It means that the people are going to be fleeing for their own lives to the degree that men who have children are not even going to turn back to grab their children by the hand. Everybody's just going to be running away from the onslaught that is coming their way. "The tumult of chariots, the rumbling of the wheels of the chariots, and the fathers have not turned back for their children because of the limpness of their own hands." In other words, it's going to be a complete slaughter, a complete wipeout. "On account of the day that is coming to destroy all the Philistines and to cut off from Tyre and Sidon every ally that is left." We've talked about Tyre and Sidon in the past. Tyre and Sidon were sister cities, one of which was an island that had a fortress built on the island. They thought that they were impregnable, that they would never be taken down. Ezekiel tells us about the conquering, finally, of Tyre and Sidon. Jeremiah mentions it as well, because they would have been allies. They would have been helpers to the Philistines, but they'll be cut off too. So there's no hope. And by the way, just to stress the point, not only is there no help or hope for the Philistines, but their gods, the very gods that took away the children of Israel to worship these foreign entities, their gods are no help to them. When Yahweh announces his judgment, that judgment comes on those people. Why? For the Lord Yahweh is going to destroy the Philistines, the remnant of the coastland of Kaphtor. Baldness has come upon Gaza. Ashkelon has been ruined. O remnant of the valley, how long will you gash yourself? In other words, God is saying you're being sliced open by the armies of the Babylonians, and yet you won't repent, and yet you continue to believe in your own gods, and you will not turn and recognize the God of Israel. So the punishment that is coming upon you is your own fault. How long will you continue to slice yourself? Verse 6. "Ah, sword of the Lord, how long will you not be quiet? Withdraw into your sheath, be at rest, and stay still." So it's the sword of the Babylonians. And yet Jeremiah says it's the sword of the Lord. And the cry is, how long is this going to go on before God is ready to put his sword away? The answer is in verse 7, "How can it be quiet when the Lord Yahweh has given it an order against Ashkelon and against the seacoast? There he has assigned it." Okay, so you can go back in history and you can see that those things actually did occur, proving yet again that the God of the Bible knows what he's talking about. He can announce his judgments in advance. He can predict them. And even though human beings may be able to read the predictions, they can't do anything to stop the predictions. And all the gods of the Philistines couldn't do anything to cause the sword of the Lord to rest. Instead, the judgment comes. So that takes us on to verse 48. Concerning Moab. "Thus says the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, Woe to Nebo, for it has been destroyed. Kiriathaim has been put to shame, and it has been captured. The lofty stronghold has been put to shame, and it has been shattered. Those are the two major cities there in Moab. Nebo is not Mount Nebo. You're probably familiar with that name. Nebo is one of the chief cities, along with Kiriathaim. At one point, they were inhabited by Reuben, the tribe of Reuben. The land was right on the border between the area of Moab and the area of Reuben, so they would fight back and forth constantly for it. According to the Moabite stone, there actually is, if you want, go on the internet, take a look at the Moabite stone, look that up, because it actually exists in the British Museum in London, and it actually confirms everything I'm reading here. The biblical accounts are actually confirmed on what is known as the Moabite stone, which is about the battles that they fought. So Nebo and Kiriathaim were cities that were inhabited by Reuben that were later captured by Moab. And that's what's being talked about here in these first five verses of chapter 48. There is praise for Moab no longer. In Heshbon, they have devised calamity against her. Come and let us cut her off from being a nation. You too, madmen, will be silenced. That's a city, by the way, madmen. That is not a TV show. The sword will follow after you. The sound of an outcry from Horonaim. Devastation and great destruction. Moab is broken. Her little ones have sounded out the cry of distress. For by the ascent of Luhith, they will ascend with continual weeping. For at the descent of Horonaim, they have heard the anguished cry of their destruction. So flee, save your lives, that you may be like the juniper in the wilderness, so that you may be like the juniper is like tumbleweed, is the idea here. Make a run for it, but go out into the wilderness. Don't be recognized or you're going to be destroyed. Flee, save your lives. For because of your trust in your own achievements and your own treasures, even you yourself will be captured, and Chemosh will go off to exile together with his priests and his princes. So here again, God is calling out the particular cities. He's calling out their gods. He's calling out their priests. And he's saying that they're all going to be destroyed. And the reason is because they trusted in their own achievements and treasures. As I said a moment ago, Moab for a long time was in relative peace. And during that time, they became pretty prosperous. And as a consequence, they started thinking that they did that, that they were responsible for their own well-being. And then they trusted that. You trust your own achievements, you trust your own treasures, but you're going to be captured. Verse 8, and the destroyer will come to every city so that no city will escape. The valley also will be ruined, and the plateau will be destroyed, as the Lord has said. Again, I find this fascinating because it proves that Yahweh is aware of the topography and the geography of the land of the earth. And he makes mention here not only of the lower areas and the valleys, but then he mentions the plateau in particular. The plateau was the Transjordan Highland where most of the cities of Moab were located. In a moment, he's going to name cities from the north to the south all the way through Moab to prove that he knows the cities, the chief cities, the ones that are in the valleys, the ones that are up on the plateau. And the fact that they were up on the plateau is one of the reasons that they thought that they were safe. They were up on an ascent. And so armies would have to climb to get to them or at least march upward to get to them. And so they were able to defend themselves. But in their trust in their own abilities, God says that the destroyer is going to come to every one of your cities, even in the valley, even on the plateau, because God is the God of topography. Verse 9, give wings to Moab, for she will flee away, and her cities will become desolation, without inhabitants in them. Cursed be the one who does the Lord's work negligently, and cursed be the one who restrains his sword from blood. Do me a favor, look over at Ezekiel for just a moment. Ezekiel 25. You know that Jeremiah is still in areas of Judah as he is predicting these things. Ezekiel is in Babylon predicting these exact same things. In Ezekiel 25, verse 8, you're going to read language that is very parallel to what we just saw out of Jeremiah. But he gives us an extra little detail. Ezekiel 25, starting in verse 8, thus says Yahweh God, the Lord God, because Moab and Seir say, behold, the house of Judah is like all the nations. Therefore, behold, I am going to deprive the flank of Moab of all of its cities. So what was their arrogance in seeing Israel fall and seeing Israel deported into Babylon that made them rise up and begin to mock Israel and saying Israel's nothing particular, their God is not apparently strong enough to preserve them, they're just like all the other nations. And then God, who defends Israel, says, because you think that, I'm also going to take you down. All your cities are going to fall. All of their frontiers are going to fall. And the glory of the land is all going to fall. Beth Jeremosh, Baal Meon, and Kiriathaim. And I will give it for a possession along with the sons of Ammon to the sons of the east, that the sons of Ammon may not be remembered among the nations. Thus I will execute judgments on Moab, and they will know that I am Yahweh. That's why God is doing it. I am the self-existent God. I am the God of Israel. You have mocked Israel because they've gone into the Babylonian captivity. You have said they're nothing special, and in so doing, you have insulted the God of Israel. So that God says, I'm going to bring judgment against you and execute judgment on Moab so that you will know that I am Yahweh. But the interesting little detail I want you to see here is that he says, I'm going to give it for a possession along with the sons of Ammon to the sons of the east. It wasn't ultimately Babylon that took them down. Actually, Moab was destroyed by nomadic desert tribesmen who actually did come from the east. That's what history tells us. So again, what a surprise. God was right. The Bible is accurate and lines up historically with what actually happened in the Middle East because Yahweh is the God of nations, not just the God of Israel. Okay, we're back in Jeremiah 47. Cursed is the one who does the Lord's work negligently. He then brings those tribes to come destroy Moab, like he said. Verse 11, now he describes Moab's condition. Moab has been at ease since his youth. He has also been undisturbed on his lease. Neither has he been emptied from vessel to vessel, nor has he gone into exile. Therefore, he retains his flavor and his aroma has not changed. That language seems very foreign to us right now because we don't make wine, but that's wine making language, that whole verse. When you would make wine, first you would crush it with your feet, get the juice out of the grapes, And then you would let it ferment in a wineskin or some sealed container for about 40 days. During that time, the dregs of the wine, the end of the skins, the last of the fruit, would fall to the bottom. And you would pour it from vessel to vessel in order to strain it, in order to get the dregs out of it. If you don't do that, and you just let that wine sit for too long, it becomes overly sweet, it becomes very aromatic, but it also ruins the wine. And so God just used winemaking language to say that Moab has been at ease and undisturbed, and as a consequence, they've never been poured out so that the dregs could be removed from them. Instead, they've just sat around undisturbed. They haven't been emptied from vessel to vessel, and they haven't ever gone into exile. They don't know what that's like, and therefore they retain that aroma, that sweetness that happens with ruined wine that's destroyed by its remnants being left inside it, that the dregs have never been poured out. Therefore, behold, the days are coming, declares the Lord, when I shall send to him those who do tip vessels, and they will tip him over, and they will empty his vessels, and they shall shatter his jars. So they are going to be poured out, but they're going to be poured out the way you would pour ruined wine out on the ground, not from vessel to vessel so that you could drink it or enjoy it. And Moab will be ashamed of Chemosh as the house of Israel was ashamed at Bethel. Chemosh is one of the gods of the Moabites. Now, when the northern tribes of Israel separated from the southern tribes of Judah, right away at Bethel, they set up their first two golden calves. So that became one of the early places where the worship of foreign gods entered into Israel. God points that out and says the house of Israel was ashamed, in fact, taken into the Assyrian captivity. And they did that because they had confidence in these golden calves that they had built there at Bethel. So Moab is likewise going to be ashamed of Chemosh, their god, as the house of Israel was ashamed by their golden calves at Bethel. How can you say, we are mighty warriors and men valiant for battle? Moab has been destroyed, and men have gone up to his cities. His finest young men have gone down to the slaughter, declares the king whose name is Yahweh of armies. So God points out, I'm in charge of the armies of the earth. I'm in charge of the armies of heaven. What I say goes, therefore I can use any of the armies of planet earth to accomplish my will as I determine. Verse 16, the disaster of Moab will soon come, and his calamity has swiftly hastened. Mourn for him, all you who live around him, even all of you who know his name. Say, how has the mighty scepter been broken, a staff of splendor? Come down from your glory and sit on the parched ground, O daughter dwelling in Dibon. For the destroyer of Moab has come up against you. He has ruined your strongholds. Stand by the road and keep watch, O inhabitant of Aroer. Ask him who flees and her who escapes and say, what has happened? Moab has been put to shame, for it has been shattered. Wail and cry out. Declare by the Arnon that Moab has been destroyed. Then he's going to list the cities from north to south that are the chief cities there in Moab, demonstrating again that God knows every single one of them, and he's going to list them. These are all cities, by the way, that are on that Transjordan plateau that I mentioned. These are the cities that feel most protected at that moment, and he's going to name these cities in order. judgment has come upon the plain, upon Halon, Jaza, and against Mephaoth, against Dibon, Nebo, and Beth Diblathaim, against Kiriathaim, Beth Gamul, and Beth Meon, against Kiriath, Basra, and all the cities of the land of Moab, far and near. Then to understand verse 25, remember in Daniel's prophecy, he talks about horns, a series of horns that demonstrate power, leading to the little horn, or his likeness of the beast of the Medo-Persians, that it was a ram with one horn that grew up higher than the other. So horns are a demonstration of power. And in verse 25, we read, the horn of Moab has been cut off, and his arm is broken, declares the Lord. So the power, the authority, the wealth of Moab is going to be destroyed. And then he's going to wander around like a drunk man. Make him drunk, for he has become arrogant toward Yahweh. So Moab will wallow in his vomit, and he also will become a laughingstock. Now, was not Israel a laughingstock to you? Or was he caught among thieves? This is God now saying to Moab, you made fun of Israel, my people. You said bad things about him. But what was he guilty of? Was he caught among the thieves? Or is he being judged because of me? Now, was not Israel a laughingstock to you? Or was he caught among thieves? For each time you speak about him, you shake your head in scorn. Leave the cities and dwell among the crags, O inhabitants of Moab, and be like a dove that nests beyond the mouth of the chasm. We have heard of the pride of Moab. He is very proud of his haughtiness, his pride, his arrogance, and his self-exaltation. I know his fury, declares the Lord, but it is futile. His idle boasts have accomplished nothing. Therefore, I shall wail for Moab. Even for all Moab shall I cry out. I will moan for the men of Kir Heres, more than the weeping of Jazer. I will weep for you, O vine of Sibmah. Now he's talking about them as if they are a vine of grapes that produces good wine. He says, your tendrils or your branches stretched out to the sea. That's probably the Dead Sea, and they reached the Sea of Jazer. And upon your summer fruits and your grape harvest, the destroyer has fallen. So gladness and joy are taken away from the fruitful field, even from the land of Moab, and I have made the wine to cease from the wine presses. No one will tread them with shouting. The shout will not be shouts of joy. From the outcry at Heshbon, even to Elealeh, even to Jahaz, they have raised the voice. From Zoar, even to Horonaim, and to Egleth Shelishiah, for even the waters of Nimrim have become desolate. For I shall make an end of Moab, declares the Lord. The one who offers sacrifice on the high places, and the one who burns incense to his gods. Notice again that God takes it personally and says, I'm conquering this people, but I'm doing more than just conquering them as a nation of people. I'm demonstrating more than just I know their geography. I know what they worship, and I'm going to destroy what they worship. I'm going to destroy the priests that led the worship. I'm going to destroy their worship because it is the worship of a God that is not God, and I won't stand for that, but also because you led astray my people Israel so that they also worshiped your gods, and they are my people, and I am a jealous God, and I am going to bring them back to myself, and I will make an end of Moab, declares the Lord. And the one who offers sacrifice on the high place, and the one who burns incense to his gods, I'm going to destroy all of them. Therefore, my heart wails for Moab like flutes. My heart also wails like flutes for the men of Kir Hares. Therefore, they have lost the abundance that they produced. For every head is bald and every beard is cut short. There are gashes on their hands and their sackcloth on their loins. Those are all indications of sadness and repentance. They are mourning over the fact that the God of Israel has taken down their land completely. They've shaved their heads, they've cut off their beards, they've gashed their hands to bleed before their gods, and they have sackcloth on their loins. On all the housetops of Moab and in its streets, there is lamentation everywhere. For I have broken Moab like an undesirable vessel, declares the Lord. How shattered it is. How they have wailed. How Moab has turned his back. He is ashamed. So Moab will become a laughingstock and an object of terror to all around him. For thus says Yahweh, behold, one will fly swiftly like an eagle and spread out his wings against Moab. Kirioth has been captured, and the strongholds have been seized. So the hearts of the mighty men of Moab in that day will be like the heart of a woman in labor. And Moab will be destroyed from being a people group. They're going to be scattered. By the way, you can test that. Have you met a Moabite lately? Do you hear a lot on the news about what's going on in Moab these days? No, you don't, because what God said here has already come true, that he has scattered Moab, and they will be destroyed from being a people because he has become arrogant toward Yahweh. Terror, pit, and snare are coming upon you, O inhabitants of Moab, declares Yahweh. And the one who flees from the terror will fall into a pit, and the one who climbs up out of the pit will be caught in a snare. For I will bring upon her, even upon Moab, the year of their punishment, declares Yahweh. In the shadow of Heshbon, the fugitives stand without strength, for a fire has gone forth from Heshbon, and the flame from the midst of Sihon. And it has devoured the forehead of Moab and the scalps of the riotous revelers. Woe to you, Moab! The people of Chemosh have perished. For your sons have been taken away captive, and your daughters have been taken into captivity. And then, at the very end of 46 verses of really bad news for Moab, in which God has demonstrated that he is the God of Israel and the God of nations, in which God tells us history in advance and tells men, your fortifications and all your riches and your armies are nothing. I am the God of armies. I'm going to destroy you. I'm going to destroy your chief cities. I'm going to knock down your walls. I'm going to scatter you until you're not even a people anymore. And after 46 verses of all that bad news, it ends with verse 47, yet I will restore the fortunes of Moab in the latter days, declares the Lord. Okay, so this will be easy. A minute ago, I asked you all, do you hear a lot about Moab these days? When you go into work, do you meet folks who say, hey, where are you from? Moab. Oh, you're a Moabite. You're meeting a lot of Moabites? No. You don't hear about the wealth of Moab. You don't hear about them having any influence over there in the Middle East these days. God has done everything that he said he was going to do to them. And yet he says, I'm going to restore their fortunes in the latter days. Have those fortunes been restored?
No.
So we're not in the latter days yet. Those latter days are coming. Because those latter days include things like the return of Christ. And the setting up again of the kingdom of Israel, and Christ sitting on his throne in Jerusalem, and all the Gentile nations who were ever enemies of Israel which is why we read tonight that God purposefully left certain nations in Israel in order to train Israel, in order to test Israel. All of those nations are going to be restored, and the blessings of God are going to flow from Jerusalem out to those nations, and those nations are going to be required to come up to Israel once a year to keep the Feast of Booths. If they don't, God's going to cut off their reign. All of that is still waiting to be done. There's still all of this kingdom stuff waiting to be established. And when Jesus Christ, as king, sits on his throne in Jerusalem, then God is going to restore the fortunes of Moab in the latter days. And thus far is the judgment on Moab. Now, is God going to do that?
Yes.
Is God going to restore Moab? Yeah. And how do we demonstrate that that's going to happen? By the fact that everything in the first 46 verses happened. All the judgments he laid out against the Philistines, all the judgments he laid out against the Moabites, those have all come true in time and history. We can see that, which means 46 out of 47 verses of this chapter have been satisfied. Do you think God's going to let that one get away from him?
No,
he's also going to, in establishing the kingdom of his son, he's going to demonstrate, again, his grace and his establishment of these people groups, because these people groups are in his hand. They were in his hand from the start when he brought his people in to the land of Israel. And he even said in particular why he waited for 400 years, because the iniquity of the Amorites was not yet to the full. When that time came, he brought his people in, but then he kept certain people intact for the good of Israel, for the benefit of Israel. And in the latter day, he's going to make his king sit on his throne from Jerusalem, again for the good of Israel. And we've seen all the prophecies that he's going to gather all of the scattered Israelites and bring them back to their land again, and they are going to be one nation in his hand yet again. And when he does that, he's going to reestablish those nations around Israel for the benefit of Israel and enrich them through Israel so that they can bring their sacrifices and offerings to Israel each year when they're required to come. It's all about God glorifying himself, and it's all about God being the faithful God of Israel. And all those other gods of all those other nations are going to bow the knee to the God who is.
Thank you for listening to this week's Salvation by Grace midweek message. We encourage you to visit our website at salvationbygrace.org for books, Q&As, and our ever-expanding archive of audio sermons. And we invite you to join us next time when we gather around the Word and study the sovereign grace of God.